Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. Hey, happy Friday. Welcome to the program. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110. The email is pete@thepetecallinershow.com. And we want to give, prayers up for Baron Murphy. He's a guy who works down the hall at WBTV. He's worked here for decades, and I knew him years ago. And when I came back to BT, ran into him in the hallways again, got to catch up. For the 8 years that I was on timeout, he was not, but just a really nice guy and one of those jack of all trades. Did engineering work. I mean, he just did everything. And I was like, they're building some little outdoor studio, and I was hanging out one day outside talking with him about that. But he's apparently gone into hospice care. And so our prayers are with him and his family for comfort and for strength. And, you just know that he is loved. Y'all are loved, and we are sad today. We've got an update on the Title IX rule that the Biden administration promised it was going to rewrite for all of us plebs. They have done so. I'll get to that. But first, let us start halfway around the world. Long-distance aircraft fired missiles that struck Iranian Air Force assets in Iran, in a place called Isfahan, whatever. It's in central Iran, and reportedly is the site or the town or near it or something to one of the nuclear facilities that Iran is totally not using in order to build a nuclear weapon. Jerusalem Post has confirmed this. This is perceived to be, in the diplomatic sphere, this is perceived to be a message to Iran that we can take out your nukes if we want to, that you're totally not building. It's for peaceful purposes only. Two Israeli defense officials, three Iranian officials confirmed to the New York Times that Israel was involved. The report came shortly after local sources reported explosions in Isfahan, central Iran. Also, two other targets, one in southern Syria and another in the Baghdad area. And the Babel governorate of Iraq. So I guess four sites total. I saw one analysis of this early today pointing out that, if Iran pushed the line of acceptability, basically, when it launched all of the missiles directly from Iran into Israel. And because up until then, it was like the line was proxies, right? That we've got all of these, like Iran's got proxy militias in Lebanon, in Gaza, all over, right? In Syria. And so so they could send all of their rockets that they wanted. They're supplying these militias with all the ordnance. And so these militias then launch from those areas. And those are the proxy locales. And as long as that's what Iran was doing, then it was sort of like, okay, it's not really Iran. It's like this little facade, this plausible deniability. It's totally not us. It's just, the Iranian military guys, the Quds Force and such, that are just, hanging out and showing you like how to launch the missiles that they just drove up in the truck carrying, right? Like, but it's totally not us. But when Iran hit Israel in retaliation for Israel doing what? Right? They hit a target in Syria. Now, the Iranians are like, that was an embassy. There is debate about that. Just because you hang up a shingle that says embassy, you know, you write embassy on a cardboard piece of paper and you glue it to the door, that doesn't make it an embassy automatically, especially because Israel apparently took out the building next to your embassy, not the embassy itself. So anyway, they whacked a couple of the high-ranking Revolutionary Guard commanders who have been the leaders for these proxy militias and helped to plan the October 7th massacre in Israel. So Israel responds, they take out some of the leadership, and then Iran's like, oh, no, you didn't. And so then they launch a whole bunch of rockets, and these came from Iran property. And that is the crossing of the line, right? That's the breaking of the facade. No more plausible deniability. This is a direct attack. And so Iran then shoots off the 300 missiles over the weekend. They get their asses kicked, totally humiliated. And then what? Joe Biden comes in after telling Iran, dude, they did. And then he tells Israel, which meant don't retaliate too much. Nobody really knows. And Israel's like, pound sand, Joe. And they retaliated. But they did give Joe a heads up. Well, I take that back. They gave the White House a heads up. I don't know if they told Joe. Was he at the beach again yesterday? Is he going to the beach again this weekend? I'm not sure. Well, these are the moments, you know. You're not going to have a lot. Never mind. So Israel responded. And the idea, at least one analysis, is that the idea here is that Israel has now sort of reset the line back to proxies, right? That by hitting these targets as Israel did, it sent the message to Iran, we do not have a problem firing on your country. We do not have a problem bombing your stuff. We know where your nuclear facility is, and we will destroy it. But they also hit these other sites. And so if Iran says, you know, oh, you merely a flesh wound, you know, they can take the off ramp here if they so choose. A U.S. official told CNN that the Iranian target was not nuclear itself. Videos from that area, the Isfahan area, appeared to show Iranian air defenses activated in the skies over the area. A senior U.S. official also confirmed on Friday morning the attack occurred. We were not surprised, while also telling, saying that Israel informed the U.S. in advance of the strike. So we did get a heads up. But the heads up was, I think, something like, hey, we're going to be launching a strike sometime in 24 to 48 hours. The southern Syria targets were radar sites. All right, so there's that. Meanwhile, at Chapel Hill, order up. Here's that attention you ordered. Yes, UNC Chapel Hill SJP put out a press release. SJP, which is Students for Justice in Palestine. They are very upset about what happened on the University of Columbia or Columbia University's campus yesterday. Did you see this? A whole bunch of the pro-Hamas folks were out there. They did a tent in, I think is what they... Or a tent city. And they set up a whole bunch of tents, which weirdly enough, I think it was Martha McCallum on Fox News who noted that all the tents were identical, which is weird. And they got all these tents set up in some grassy area. I want to call it the quad, but I don't know if they call it the quad. They probably do. I mean, that's what everybody calls like that kind of grassy area in between buildings. But they set up all these tents there, like an Occupy Columbia Wall Street kind of a thing. And they got all these tents, and they're like 95% of them are identical tents. What does that mean? Think about it. Yeah, it's an organized, coordinated effort, probably with one credit card, right? And they just ordered a whole bunch of the same tent. And they dropped them all off. So I'm kind of curious what all the tent situation is going to be at Chapel Hill, because they're planning one. They're setting one up at Chapel Hill, supposedly, like over the last hour or so. And they're going to be tent citying, like, which is like literally the, like, the, it's almost the least you can do. It really is. Like, you're just going to sit there. It's like, it's not quite as lazy as a die-in, you know, because you do have to set up a tent. The die-in where people just like lay around is literally the least you can do to protest. So they're going to set one up, and they're doing it to protest the brutal and unprecedented repression that occurred on the campus of Columbia because NYPD was brought in to clear it out. And the biggest outrage of all, you'll never guess. They threw all of the tents and the backpacks and stuff, all of the trash, they threw it all in an alleyway. That's it. Zionist monsters! Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? Alrighty. Not even 6 full months have passed since the October 7th massacre. And already that act of unspeakable barbarity has been reduced to a passing aside in democratic rhetorical assaults on Israeli perfidy. That is, when it is mentioned at all. Noah Rothman, writing earlier this month at National Review, talked about the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, making remarks in front of the media. And he gave this quote. Whoever saves a life saves the entire world. That's our strength, he says. It's what distinguishes us from terrorists like Hamas. If we lose that reverence for human life, we risk becoming indistinguishable from those we confront. The implication, of course, is that it'll be Israel's fault when those who lack elementary powers of discretion discern no difference between the Jewish state and a nihilistic death cult that murdered, raped, and burned alive as many Jews as it could, including Americans, by the way. As a matter of fact, the observational deficiencies that would lead somebody to endorse this hopeless moral equivalency are the observer's problem. But the myopia that Blinken described is increasingly endemic among his fellow Democrats. President Joe Biden has called for a ceasefire, which, of course, empowers Hamas. It emboldens them. It strengthens them. How so, Pete? Glad you asked. It does so because Hamas knows if the U.S. is already saying this stuff now, the longer Hamas holds out and doesn't give up any hostages and can continue to be perceived as the oppressed, eventually they'll win, right? There are, it was Coleman Hughes who said this. He's a Conversations with Coleman. That's his podcast. He's got a new book out. Anyway, he's the one, the first one I heard say this, and maybe he was quoting somebody else, but I'm attributing it to him, which was there are two wars going on right now. One's a PR war and one's an actual military war. And Israel is winning the latter. Hamas is winning the former. Hamas is winning the PR battle. And they know this. So as long as they can keep holding on in the military war, they will hopefully be successful to them, right? They'll be successful in the PR war to stop the military war. And they don't care really how many of their own people die in the process. That's why they put all of the military installations in the civilian areas and in the buildings, in the churches or the mosques, I should say, Well, they did hit a couple churches like that, too. They stuff stuff under churches, but also schools, hospitals, right? Because it helps them win the PR war. That's the war they are fighting. Chemical weapons are typically associated with Middle Eastern war zones, not Ivy League colleges. So when one of them was allegedly deployed, a chemical weapon, not a war zone or a college. So when a chemical weapon was deployed at Columbia University, it ignited a media frenzy. See, pro-Palestinian protesters that had set up all of their tents and such, they told the Columbia Spectator that they had been sprayed with skunk, which is a crowd control chemical developed by the Israeli Defense Forces, and I would assume smells like skunk or marijuana. Like, how would you even tell the difference? Right? Like, if you're out at a protest and some Israeli Defense Force guy shows up and sprays the place down with skunk, wouldn't you just think you're back in the dorms? Right? Anyway, mainstream media, I'm sorry, this was at a rally in January, so this was not when they were tenting. Sorry, my bad. Mainstream media amplified the allegations, of course, and Columbia suspended a student involved in the attack, which, by the way, he had previously served in the Israeli Defense Forces. Which, like, all of them have to do, I think, right? Isn't, like, every Israeli... Don't they all have to go into the services for like a year or two or something? Anyway, the narrative was a progressive fever dream. The Washington Free Beacon's Aaron Sabarium reports, at one of the best universities in the country, an Israeli student had deployed chemical weapons against peaceful student protesters for challenging the alleged depredations of the Jewish state. Columbia President Minush Shafik repeated this claim at a meeting of the university's Senate. She said, quote, demonstrators were sprayed with a toxic chemical. Well, lo, these many months later, we have determined what the toxic chemical agent was. It is called Liquidaz. It is a fart spray. Yes, indeed, it is a gag gift for adults and children, according to its product description online. And the individual who sprayed the substance in the air, not at an individual, he sprayed it up in the air, in what the lawsuit now describes as a harmless expression of speech. John Moore is the happiest person now in the world to learn.
I saw this one coming, Pete. I was ready for that.
This is freedom of speech?
Yes. Does that mean we can do that in here?
No.
Okay.
Flatulence is apparently a harmless... It's not harmless. The result was a swift suspension for the student, who is now suing, alleging that the university rushed to silence the plaintiff and brand him as a criminal through biased misconduct proceedings. Columbia claimed in January that the incident was, quote, possibly a hate crime, which, by the way, I think that still could be true. Okay. I mean, I would have to smell the product first. This Liquidaz. Protest. Sorry. The protest featured students who were promoting the attacks on Israel and chanted slogans like Intifada and Glory to Our Martyrs. They did an impromptu class called Resistance 101. It featured speakers from terror groups, Israeli-designated terror groups. They also had somebody named Khalid Barakat, who praised plane hijackings, right? Which for some reason you're not allowed to do anymore. The lawsuit alleges that Columbia failed to protect the plaintiff, the fart spraying guy, from anti-Semitic harassment as he underwent a rigged disciplinary process that presumed him guilty from the start because of his affiliation with Israel. Non-Israeli students at the rally were not disciplined in any manner, the complaint says, even though the university had not approved the event. This is the second time this year Columbia has been sued for anti-Semitic discrimination. In February, the Stand With Us Center for Legal Justice, filed a lawsuit against Columbia alleging that Jewish students had been assaulted, spit on, threatened, and treated unequally, in part due to the school's failure to enforce their own policies. Similar complaints have been filed against Middlebury, MIT, Barnard, Harvard University. By the way, there is a common thread here in this in the topic I did the other day on the Methodist United Methodist Church, which that fight has been brewing for a very long time. And it's the same sort of dynamic that occurs here is you get it's not necessarily only, you know, conservative versus progressive. It's progressives that come in, act in defiance of the rules, and then do not get punished according to the rules. And when that happens, then it emboldens more of the kinds of disruption and defiance, and it just keeps escalating by not enforcing your rules. Look, and this is the same thing with law, right? Remember the Charlotte City Ordinance that the council adopted that prompted the state to come down with HB2. And I'll never forget Bob Hageman, the city attorney, told city council when asked, can't this be used to basically like arrest people, business owners and the like, and force them to comply with these things, get all sorts of fines, whatever. And he says, well, obviously we would not enforce that. Well, that's not how rules and laws are supposed to work. If you're not going to enforce law, then you don't put it on the books. You don't make it a law if you're not going to prosecute it. You end up with so many laws, and then it becomes discretionary, and that becomes tyranny. Because now everybody's breaking some law at any given time. They don't even know it because nobody else is being prosecuted for it. Noah Rothman, I mentioned him earlier. Noah Rothman not only wrote that piece, I'll give you the headline on that one. It was called Democratic Politics Shift Towards the View That Hamas Should Win. And yesterday, headline, Noah Rothman again, throw the anti-American left under the bus. This is his recommendation to the Democrat Party. He says, you're likely to hear a lot about the polls showing that Americans are growing impatient with Israel. Democrats and their media allies seem to have concluded that this sentiment will grow along a sort of straight line trajectory until a majority have become intractably hostile towards Israel's defensive war against Hamas. But straight line trajectories are inherently fallacious. They take no account of exogenous events, outside events, such as Iran's brazen, multi-layered missile and drone attack on Israeli population centers. Indeed, even before that attack, Democrat and media elites, but I repeat myself, had already internalized a misreading of this war and voter perception of it. He then goes into some polling and such. He says America's center-left elites should reflect amid their ongoing efforts to coddle and mollify what can only be described as a pro-terrorism constituency. That description will surely rankle these critics of Israel. But what else are you supposed to call a protest movement that burns the American flag while flying Hezbollah's banner high? How else should we regard demonstrators who adorn themselves with keffiyehs and Hamas-style headbands? Terrorist groups such as Hamas kill Americans. What are we to conclude about the intentions of those who praise and mimic them? These moonbats that block major thoroughfares, bridges, airports, right? Frustrating attempts to address medical emergencies, risking the prospect of a disaster on a flight takeoff, right? Oh, they only want to be heard by their elected officials. Is that really what's going on? Or are their intentions darker than that? Are we to believe that when these people are chanting death to America, what they really mean is that Congress and the president should recalibrate America's posture towards Israel to strike a finer balance between human rights concerns and the West's security priorities in the Middle East? Or, just hear me out on this, when they're chanting death to America, do they really mean death to America? Whose constituency is this? There's a term, oikophobia. Oikophobia. Have you heard of this? O-I-K-O-phobia. Oikophobia. You know what it means? An aversion to one's home environment. Self-contempt. Right? And this oikophobia has been instilled in now a couple generations. And I could tell you as a proud Gen Xer, this was not instilled in us. I don't ever remember hearing, but then again, like I remember going to like some parades and stuff. you know, dad playing patriotic music and the like. And I don't know if that inoculated me to this sort of thing, but it has exploded. When the Democrat Party placates this unsympathetic and objectively marginal constituency, does the Democrat Party expect that the rest of us is not going to notice? Of course we're going to notice. Rothman says it is simply not good enough for Biden and his fellow Democrats to gently chide the anti-American left and then move on. They need to throw them under the bus. That's what has to happen here. The problem, as I see it, though, with Rothman's recommendation is you can never count on Democrats to do this. You can never count on the middle to do this. The centrists, the liberals, they never do. Conservatives keep waiting for liberals to rein in the worst transgressions of the radical leftists, the progressives, and they never do it, ever. He concludes by saying it's high time the president and his allies summon the courage to defend themselves. In doing so, they might convince their dispirited supporters that the president's party is not a spent force bereft of self-confidence and a healthy sense of patriotism. The alternative is to allow the provocateurs and agitators in America's streets to set the terms of the debate and dictate the tempo of events. To allow that to continue is politically suicidal for the Democrats. Right? And that is what they're allowing. This is what they are coddling, right? Because they're afraid, what, they're going to lose Michigan or something? But I suspect, actually, if they were to come out and say, you guys, shut up. Like, seriously. And look, I know Democrats know how to speak this language because they speak it to conservatives all the time. Right? Shut-uppery is a well-worn tactic of the left. Like, oh, okay, conservative, you made this argument. You've presented some evidence and you've logically traced the roots of the problem, offered up some potential solutions. So in response, I would just offer, shut up. Right? I have been having these debates with people for 20 years, and it's a well-worn response. So I know they know how to speak this language. They need to speak it to their radical fringe base. And this, you know, I understand you want to focus on the MAGA and the Tea Partiers and the far right fascist Nazi they're commies. They never say commies. They don't actually say the word communist, which, by the way, did you see what Florida just did on the communist thing? Yeah, they're going to now require a class to teach about the history and the horrors of communism, which is really weird if you think about it, because they teach about the Holocaust, Nazism, fascism, right? All of these different other isms. They do teach those things, but there's never this focus on communism, Marxism as a religion, because that's what it is. I've been saying that for a while, right? It's a religion. It requires a faith. It is, like, it's never been proven to work, yet people believe it works, right? It's a religion. It has language. It has sacraments. Will they be able to do it? Will they throw their leftist fringe, their pro-Hamas, anti-American fringe under the bus, as Rothman recommends? I doubt it. By the way, more than two dozen anti-Israel protesters who snarled traffic on San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge the other day, they have been freed from jail because the city's top prosecutor does not have enough evidence to charge them. According to the New York Post, the DA urged drivers who were delayed by the hours-long gridlock to contact police so they can be alleged as a victim. So they're asking people to come forward and press charges, basically, because the people who blocked the bridge and kept people on that bridge for 4 hours, more than 4 hours, they're being asked to contact Highway Patrol so they can continue to investigate possible false imprisonment charges. Right? That is the way. That is the way. These people sat there. They had no access to restrooms, right? They were put in, their lives were put in jeopardy by being trapped on a bridge that large. You know, especially the ones that were so far up to the front, they couldn't get off. They couldn't get off the bridge. They missed doctor's appointments. You had nurses that were late for their shifts. That endangered people's lives at the hospitals. right? They were trapped there. Could you imagine if that other guy, Chesa Bowden, imagine if he was still the prosecutor there? They would have let everybody... Oh, never mind. They've already been let out.
All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.